Okay, good afternoon. This is case number 73483, Wells Fargo Bank versus CFA Inc. And Mr. Ames for the appellant, Mr. Amon for the respondent. Would the appellant wish to reserve some time for rebuttal today? 5 minutes. Okay, well, so when it gets to 5 minutes left, there'll be a little noise there, so you know to wrap it up then at that time. And also, for the record, Chief Justice Douglas and Justice Cherry, as you probably know, are retiring at the beginning of January, so they won't be participating in the decision of these cases we're arguing today and tomorrow. Okay, so Mr. Ames, you want to proceed?
Thank you, Your Honors. Byron Ames, I am counsel for the appellant Wells Fargo Bank in this matter. And just briefly, to put this into context, this is a case in which the affidavit and expert report that's required in NRS 11258 do not apply to Wells Fargo Bank's negligence claim against the respondent, because a public sewer lateral, a pipe underground that's publicly owned, is not an impertinence under NRS 2565-2A. And additionally, CFA Inc., the respondent, their negligence falls outside the scope of the statutory scheme of NRS 11256 at SEC. So going straight into the first part of that, and that's that this is not a non-residential construction case. This is, because it's not, NRS 11256 to 259 do not apply. In coming to that position, we look at briefly the language in the statute, which states, this is NRS 112565, action involving non-residential construction defined, and it says, action involving non-residential construction means an action that, and then it gives some requirements. A, is commenced against a design professional. Nobody's disputing whether or not CFA Inc. is a design professional. That's their trade. And, so you need both, B, involves the design, construction, manufacture, repair, landscaping of a non-residential building or structure, lists a bunch of things, or an appurtenance, including without limitation the design, construction, manufacture, repair, or landscaping of a new or an existing non-residential building or of an appurtenance. So the focus has been largely at the district court level and today on what is this appurtenance word and what does that mean? Because the two elements to get us to require this affidavit and report would be to have non-residential construction. In order to have that, we need to have the design professional, which we do have, and then some sort of an appurtenance or something, as we look at the definition of appurtenance, something that benefits this non-residential building. My client's building is a non-residential building. It's a bank. Okay, so when we continue looking at the statute, it says, number two, as used in this section, appurtenance means, and it starts listing, a structure, installation, facility, amenity, or other improvement that is appurtenant to or benefits one or more non-residential buildings or structures that is not a part of the non-residential building or structure. That word benefits is important because it's helping us understand what appurtenance means. It's something that is for the benefit of that building, okay, or that structure. And then it lists a long list of things.
So Wells Fargo wouldn't require a sewer lateral to the public sewer system?
They would, yes. Arguably, if they did not have running water, like many businesses, they may have to shut for the day. You know, running water or an ability to get rid of their waste.
But the lateral that flooded, was that the lateral that was used by Wells Fargo to access the public sewer system?
Yes. And the reason...
Why doesn't the lateral benefit your client's building?
The lateral does benefit the building, which is why I want to talk about what is the meaning of benefit and how broadly does that apply in the context of this statute. Because merely benefiting in some way is not the standard. We have to, and if you apply it too broadly, you can get into a circumstance, for example, the sun shining down on the building heats the building, so is now the son an appurtenance to the building because it benefits the building. That's obviously absurd, but it could be taken too far. So what is intended by this statute when it says an appurtenance or something that benefits the building? What is meant by that, and how broadly can we then interpret the meaning of benefit?
Do you maintain that the word benefit in the definitional statute is somehow ambiguous?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and the reason being is because if you look at this list of what it says in the statute under Section 2A, it says benefits one or more, and then it gives a list of items, and it says including but not limited to. So here's the, you know, a partial list of things that we would consider benefit this building. And it says parcel of real property itself, recreational facilities, walls, sidewalks, driveways, landscaping, other structures, and it gives a list. What's interesting about that list is every single one of those items listed are conveyable interests, except what's missing conspicuously from this list is anything that is owned publicly by a public municipality. There's no street light on there. There's no sewer system listed. There's no streets listed. There's no municipal well listed. All of those things benefit, maybe in some distant way. I mean, street light, for example, provides security, less crimes. Your building's benefited by less crime. You can argue to the extremes that there may be a benefit to something, but there's a missing element in this list of items, and that's that there's nothing that's a publicly owned thing in that list. And this sewer lateral that goes to this building is not a privately owned sewer system. It's a publicly owned sewer system owned by the city of Reno. And that's important because when we look at the case law that's been cited.
Well, is that the case? I mean, when my dad was building houses, the lateral usually to the property line was installed by the, I said houses, but even commercial buildings, is installed by the property owner to connect to the public utility. Is there anything in the record that indicates who installed the lateral, how the lateral came to be? And as well, when you convey the property to a third party, I would think that Wells Fargo would be conveying the lateral too.
So, correct. When buildings, whether commercial or non or residential, are built, generally that the whoever's building this property will install the utilities up to the edge of the property line, to the street or wherever that edge of the property line is, and then attach it to, in this case, a city system or the city water or sewer system. And when the city actually puts in those things in the street, they'll often stub it right to the property line and say, now you come out and meet here. But where this occurred was out in the middle of the street. So this is in the middle of a public Reno street. This is not happening on a portion of this lateral that is underground somewhere between the property line and the building. This happened in the street where it is the city's responsibility to maintain.
It's a backflow from a failure in the public street.
Correct. And
so your point is that it's really no different than if the backflow had somehow gushed to the surface and run down a whole series of properties, even though they didn't happen to have the lateral attached. Those properties would have been the victim of negligence, and they should have been allowed to sue, regardless of whether it was their lateral or just this gushing geyser out of the main sewer line in the center of California Avenue or whatever street it was.
Sure, that's correct. I mean, my
so why would we distinguish between one potential plaintiff at 820 California Avenue from the next guy at 850?
I don't think you would. And you know, we can get into, you know, who ultimately owns between the street and the building. Well, the public utility is not something you can convey an interest in that utility, whether it's water or something else. The city's retained that right. Now, you can get the right to hook into it, and if something happens in the line between your building and the public utility hookup and it's on your property, they're going to make you pay
so
to
you
fix
would
it.
You concede that's an appurtenance of running from your building to the public hookup?
Well, I don't concede that because the municipality is always going to maintain an easement, a public utility easement across your property to do whatever it wants with its easement.
Right, but your hookup is, to the extent you're hooking into the public system, and I'm not expert in this area, but isn't it your, it's an appurtenance directly to your building for the initial hookup, but when it hooks into the general system, then your point is it's no longer an appurtenance to your building, but part of the public utility system?
My position is that any part of a public utility system is going to not be, in the context of this, is not going to be considered an appurtenance. Now, we're getting into who has responsibility to maintain or fix, which may be different than whether it's an appurtenance or not, but the damage to this happened out in the street in a public right-of-way in, you know, property that's outside the private ownership of where the building, where the bank is.
I'd like to return to Justice Pickering's point. I'm not sure it's been addressed, and I'm anxious to hear your colleague's comment here. This was a below-ground flood caused by the sewers. If it had been above ground, it would have flowed onto your landscaping. And yet it seems like we're lathered up here in a case where we're fighting about whether the lateral is an appurtenance or not. I don't understand that dispute. I don't understand why you wouldn't concede that the lateral is an appurtenance to your property. The flood, as you point out, was caused by the public area. So whether the flood occurred above ground or flooded into your pipes, it would still seem to be a negligence case.
And I two brief things to say to that. Number one, I agree this is not a case about a pipe. This is a case about sewage. My client was not hurt by the pipe. My client was hurt by sewage. So this is not a case about non-residential construction.
Your client wasn't hurt by a defective pipe you owned.
Absolutely not. But the reason we don't believe it's an appurtenance is because the way the statute is drafted, if it's an appurtenance or benefits our building, and we take that definition, then an affidavit and expert report is required in order to file suit. And we don't believe it is an appurtenance because it's a publicly owned utility, and we don't believe that a publicly owned utility pipe can be something that is an appurtenance.
How is that limited by the statute? The statute, the very nature of the statute is very broad.
Correct.
So where are you finding that limitation?
Well, so the statute is broad, and when it's broad, we have to say, well, again, the statute talks about benefit and how can we take it so broad that it becomes absurd, and we can, but we shouldn't. So how do we define that then? Well, if you look at the legislative history of the statute, for example, the legislative history is clear because it says that the purpose of this NRS 11258 is that its existing law requires an attorney who files a civil action against certain design professionals for a construction defect in a residence on behalf of the plaintiff to file an affidavit with the court at the same time the attorney serves the first pleading in this action. This bill establishes similar requirements for an attorney in an action against certain design professionals involving non-residential construction. It's stating to us the purpose is we don't want a runaway non-residential construction litigation scheme, construction defect in a commercial setting. We want to rein it in and control it like we do with NRS Chapter 40. So it's giving us a defined world. And this claim does not fit within that defined world. This is not a construction defect claim that Wells Fargo Bank is making. There's no contractual relationship between Wells Fargo Bank. There's no involvement in the project. They didn't negotiate any part of it. You've got the city of Reno, who has a contract with at least CFA Inc. And other entities perhaps, but there's a public utility project happening outside in the street. That is not a construction defect case. We don't know if they did their job within the confines of, you know, what the construction standards require. We don't know that. We haven't gotten into the merit of the claim. All we know, in much like a res ipsa setting, we shouldn't have your sewage in our basement, but we do. And somehow your project outside has caused that to come into our building. So there's no construction defect setting. There's no construction defect type relationship there. No contracts or anything else. So we say that because to go to your question, The purpose of the statute is to define what happens in a construction defect non-residential setting. This isn't that case. This is something else. This is simple negligence, trespass of sewage. This is a negligence case. This is not a, you didn't build it according to standards that we negotiated or that something. This accident can happen, theoretically, within the confines of somebody meeting their standard of care. We don't know that. But there is no contractual relationship. And it's interesting because the case law that is cited to by respondent and relied upon by the district court in coming to a decision to dismiss my client's case, it's cases where there's a contractual relationship between the parties. It's also cases involving, when we're talking about sewers, all of the cases solely involve privately owned sewer systems, where they're worried about conveyability. They're transferring ownership of property, and there's a sewer system underneath it involved with it. Do we get to transfer? Do we have to transfer? I bought your property. Now, I thought I got a sewer system with it. Now we're talking about whether or not that's an appurtenance to the property, but always it's in the context
okay,
in most sewer
Grant,
system
we,
cases.
We've used all the time up. What we'll do is give you 2 minutes in rebuttal since we asked you a lot of questions.
Right? Okay.
And we'll add 2 minutes to the respondent's time to have parity here on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Amon.
Seek to limit those particular definitions impermissibly. There's a lot of discussion of what the legislature intended in terms of what the definition is. But we would simply put that the definition speaks for itself, and this court has recognized that time and time again about how broad the definition is and how great it applies across the board. There is no limitations in terms of private versus public ownership. There is no restrictions in terms of that there's got to be a contractual relationship.
Well, where did the breach in the sewer line occur? Is it correct that it occurred in the middle of California Avenue?
It occurred as one of the laterals to the particular building, and I'd like to take a step back.
Well, but that's not responsive. My question is, did it occur in California Avenue in the middle of the public street underground?
Your Honor, I'm not sure exactly where the actual breach occurred.
Okay, but let's assume then, for the sake of argument, we credit all fair inferences in a complaint, that the breach occurred in the middle of California Avenue underground, which is not the property that Wells Fargo Bank sits on. The puzzle that I have with this case, and it's a bit with these statutes, they don't immunize somebody from liability or from the put on this pleading requirement if it's unrelated to the somehow to the building that suffers the negligence. So if, in my hypothetical to your colleague, there was some sort of geyser of sewage that came up in the middle of California Avenue that sprayed the houses on either side of the street, you would agree that these statutes would have no application, right?
No, Your Honor, they would have application, and it's something that I want to clarify based on the district court record as well. If you look at the definition of structure, it is our contention that the sewer system itself is a structure. Black's Law, the seventh edition, defined a structure as any construction, production, or piece of work artificially built up or composed of parts purposely joined together. Secondarily, this court in Open Chain cited to the 10th.
That's an unpublished case, so it's only valuable to the extent we're persuaded by it. And I'm concerned about saying if they're working on a sewer main down the center of California Avenue and that turns into a geyser that damages all adjoining properties, that that's non-residential construction for which this statute applies. That's a reach for me.
What we have to focus on, Your Honor, is where the damage occurred. I mean, for a negligence claim, you've got to discuss the breach. And just as Wells Fargo pled, they were talking about the design or the work or the repair that was at issue. They were specifically complaining that there was something defective about that, and that CFA breached something in relation to the repair, the work, the construction of the sewer.
It wouldn't necessarily have even been the act of a design professional. I get that they say your client is a design professional, but design professionals do more than professional design. Like, let's say they were out there supervising and damaged the center of California Avenue so that it caused a sewage geyser.
Correct, Your Honor. And we have to look at, anytime you analyze these cases, you have to look at two things, whether the particular party is a design professional, and secondarily, whether it involves non-residential construction. And non-residential
construction. Well, and the services of a design professional in that regard. I mean, just because I'm a lawyer doesn't mean that I'm covered by medical or legal malpractice statutes all the time.
Correct, Your Honor. And it's not been disputed that CFA is a design professional and that they were operating within their design professional guidelines on this
particular
project.
I'm not sure
about
the second.
In that case, we have not gotten to that particular issue. We have a contract for which they provided services on behalf of the city of Reno in relation to the sewer construction project. But in terms of talking about what the focus of the structure is for purposes of the definition in NRS 112565, you have to focus on the structure itself. And we believe that the sewer system is the structure. Yes, the sewer system wasn't a pertinence to the Wells Fargo building. And that was what was discussed at the district court level, and that was in some of the pleadings. But I would contend at the end of the day, I do not want to see this particular statute limited in such a way that was not intended by the legislature.
So to follow your logic, then, if the flood or backup had occurred as a result of CFA's alleged design defect work at the sewer plant 10 miles away, that would fall within the scope of a structure definition under these statutes, in your judgment?
Correct, Your Honor. And while I know Urban Chain is an unpublished decision, but this court took the time to analyze the definition of structure and cited In Re City Center for the expansive nature of that particular definition and went on to state that the bus shelter at issue in Urban Chain for Urban Chain comported with the plain meaning of the word structure as it is an artificial construction. My contention here today is that any time...
Yeah, but it was the bus... I was on the panel on Urban Chain, and that structure was what was built. So to Justice Hardesty's point and to mine about the geyser in the middle of California Avenue, which are kind of steps in the same progress, I'm not sure... I mean, you're saying the entire sewer system of the city of Reno becomes an appurtenance to every property in the city of Reno, so nobody can sue a person who works on the city of Reno's sewage system as a design professional without an affidavit. I mean, it seems to be the rule you're contending for.
Correct, Your Honor. If there is a claim against a design professional related to the design services to that structure, that very broad definition, then the certificate of merit requirement is required. I would use an example. If a designer was involved in building a dam, and there is a house, a residential or non-residential building, 30 miles away, the building did not get sewers, or did not get water, did not get power from the dam, but the dam collapsed. And this homeowner or building owner wanted to sue whoever was involved in the design of that particular dam, I would contend, based on the definitions and the wording contained in NRS 112565, there would be a requirement that that person go and get an expert to provide just a threshold
level
claim.
Because on what theory under the statute would you get there? Because the dam benefits the home 30 miles away and that it prevents water from inundating it?
No, Your Honor, just because the dam is a structure. That's how broad the actual definition of the statute is. It is a structure. Nothing has to benefit the damaged property down here. There is no requirement.
Okay, yes. So you're then saying it's a pertinent to? the structure has to either be appurtenant to or benefit one or more non-residential buildings or structures. In your example, how does the dam appurtenant to or benefit the non-residential?
It doesn't need to in terms of the damaged property. What I'm focusing on is the structure itself is the dam. Whatever is damaged by the work from the structure, that is, that doesn't, they do not need to be connected.
So in this case, the district court's evaluation in all these cases trying to interpret the term appurtenance in the statute was a waste of time because it would be the pipe, it would be the structure.
Your Honor, I'd like to say it wasn't a waste of time because Judge Palaha went and separately researched.
Well, let's not, I would retract my criticism, but the analysis by the district court and your arguments below focused the party's attention for summary or for dismissal purposes on the fact that the pipe which failed was an appurtenance, and yet the hypothetical you've offered is that the structure, the dam, should be equated to the pipe, seems like to me. So what in the definition of a structure allows a public pipe to fall within it?
Well, Your Honor, and again, going back to the district court level, those were some of the questions that Judge Palaha came up with. He researched that particular issue just so he could get a nexus between the sewer system being an appurtenance. And
just to be clear, apart from what Judge Palaha did, your argument is that the pipe is a structure.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So let's turn to the definition of structure.
Yes, sir.
Where in that definition do you find that that is a structure?
We believe that in the definition of structure, which this court went to in the open chain for open chain case to determine is that the bus shelter itself was a structure, because again, structure is not defined in NRS 11.256 through 259. So you have to try to understand what is the context of structure combined with the rest of the statute. And this court specifically went to Black's Law Dictionary, a different version than the one I looked for when I was putting together my notes, and came up with that conclusion that to be a structure, all you need is it to be artificial construction. And it has to be some sort of design services that go into that. So we believe that definition is very broad. Specifically, what the court was discussing in open chain for open chain was how broad the particular statute is and how broad that definition is. Because the entire purpose behind the statute is to protect design professionals. They had a lobby that went to the legislature.
So your argument is you would equate the sewer pipe in this case with the bus shelter in that case.
It could be the
as a structure.
Yes, Your Honor. It could be the sewer pipe itself. If not the sewer pipe itself, the sewer pipe is an appurtenance to the sewer treatment facility that takes care of all of Reno, to which all these pipes are connected. Mm-hmm. And I would point you to the Trask versus Moore case, the Illinois case cited in our brief, which talked about, as well, a water treatment plant on private property had various pipes going to various residences that were no longer on the particular property. And the court in that particular case says those are all appurtenances to the water treatment facility. And I would submit that this is similar to the situation of the sewers. Either they're a structure of themselves based on the broad definition of structure, or they are at least an appurtenance to the sewer system. While they're also an appurtenance to the Wells Fargo building, that is not necessary. It does not have to focus in on that, because when you have the negligence
that contract, seems to have been the basis under which Judge Palaha dismissed the case, was that the sewer, public sewer system, the laterals and the pipe, were appurtenances to Wells Fargo's building.
Correct, Your Honor.
Would you agree that that's what the way he resolved the case?
Yes, Your Honor.
have a design professional who creates a structure or works on a structure and does so allegedly negligently, you need this affidavit. That's your reading of this statute.
Correct, Your Honor. And I believe that's the proper reading of it. When you take a step back and you look at the statute in itself, it's not limited to projects that are connected to a non-residential building. The statute doesn't care where the damage happened. The statute cares where the work was being done and where the breach of the negligence elements would have occurred.
That's very different from what the district court held.
You're right, Your Honor, and that's what I want to take this opportunity to try to correct that. Judge Palaha came to the right conclusion based on a different analysis, but I wanted to make sure that the court is not limiting this particular issue just to those buildings that have some sort of connection.
So the geyser of sewage in the middle of California Avenue would, in your mind, be covered by the statute because a design professional caused it, so it doesn't matter that it's not connected to Wells Fargo's property except by the sewer coming onto it?
Correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
It has to do with all of the particular damage. Whatever is hurt, whatever is damaged, whether it's a flood of sewage and it floods an entire block, to bring the claim against the design professional, you have to have that threshold.
Well, why even talk about appurtenances and so on in the statute? Isn't that kind of contrary to all the detail in the statute?
Your Honor, I believe that you talk about, you include all those particular details to ensure everything's covered. So you have the definition of a non-residential building.
Why have an appurtenance? Everything's a structure, right?
Based on the definition and based on looking at the statute, you can make the argument that essentially everything's a structure. But why did they go and add those particular other elements? They wanted to make sure it was as broad as possible. So that to the extent that anything gets limited, in my view, it would also be covered by the statute because they wanted to ensure that this statute was broad. It covered claims against design professionals. Why? You have to go back to years before in the discussions around the Chapter 40 matter and talking about the shotgun approach against design professionals. Design professionals often operate in a unique facet of operation. What they do is not often understood by lawyers.
So, counsel, I'd like to explore one other avenue with you at this argument, and it has to do with the argument you're making now about whether the sewer line fits within a structure that's being referenced here. Is this ambiguous, the scope of the structure as used in the affidavit requirement statutes?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe it's ambiguous at all. I think this court resolved any ambiguity.
Well, we look at the Black's Law Dictionary, but why wouldn't we in this case also look at the legislative history that brought about this statute?
And Your Honor, we did discuss the legislative history in all of our briefings, which talked about the concerns for design professionals and in situations where attorneys don't necessarily understand what the scope of services are. So this is just a requirement that anytime you have a negligence claim against a design professional, you are ultimately going to need an expert to prove those claims. This is just moving that forward slightly to require at the onset of litigation, with the filing of the litigation, that you gone out and talk to a design professional. A design professional who typically oversees sewer treatment, sewer reclamation projects, something along that lines. They don't have to look for a piece of paper. They don't have to look at a contract. All they have to say is, based on my experience, the design professional may have some liability, so there is a reasonable basis for bringing the claim against the design professional. The legislative history talks about moving that threshold requirement to the forefront of the litigation for design professionals only because of the unique nature of the design professional's work and ensuring that there is a legitimate claim against the particular design professionals.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, would you add an additional minute to Mr. Ames' time to balance this out? So you've got 3 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you. Legislative history makes it clear what the intent of the statute is. And what CFA Inc. is attempting to do is to take that legislative history where they make it clear and make it as broad as possible so that we end up with a litany of absurd results if it's applied as broadly as they're asking for this court to apply it. For example, if you had a design professional on their job site who was driving a company vehicle and they were to hit a pedestrian that's walking through the job site and injure this pedestrian, that's still arguably in the course and scope of them doing their design professional duties on this job, but now this hitting this pedestrian just randomly walking through, not an employee of workers' comp, just an innocent person walking through, is that now something that, no, we have to have an expert report that talks about how this person was injured and that it's not okay to hit somebody with your car, and do we have to go down that road? Or if the design professional is, if there's a backhoe that's digging in the ditch and it hits the sewer lateral, but the sewer lateral doesn't do anything. But they go, we hit a sewer lateral. They lift the bucket out of the ditch and they swing it around to get out of the ditch, and this wasn't as close to the building for this to happen, but say we're close to the building and now the backhoe hits the building and knocks the corner off the building. Does that mean we're now having to say, it has nothing to do with they're doing the actual construction itself, it's an accident. But now we're getting into the absurd of it all. And that was not the intent of the legislature on this.
So how can you say that? The testimony, it looks like, supporting is Senate Bill 243, and the support they received was to confine claims being made against design professionals to this affidavit requirement, akin to what was expected in medical malpractice cases.
Correct, but it does not say, and you know, and they use the reference to Chapter 40 to say this is kind of what our intent is, to make it similar to Chapter 40. In Chapter 40, for example, you cannot make personal injury claims. Those are separate. That's something else outside the statutory scheme. So under the hypothetical of someone walking through the job site and they get hit by a company truck, now are we going to drag them into the scheme that was not intended to cover that type of injury?
Well, no, but what's at issue here is whether the pipe, whether viewed as a independently as a structure or whether it's viewed as an appurtenant to a structure, the issue in the case is the alleged negligence of the design professional, which according to the legislative history that was made on Senate Bill 243 was going to require expert affidavits akin to medical malpractice.
Well, and two things.
So why isn't that? I mean, your claim is one of professional negligence against the admitted design professional. Why isn't there symmetry in that?
Because this is not an
absurd history.
I'm sorry. Because this is not an appurtenance to the building, because that creates an absurd result. But to
answer
your question about the MedMal,
okay.
You raise the MedMal issue and say this is akin to MedMal, which they do talk about. There are exceptions to that as well. For example, if a doctor knocks out a tooth while intubating somebody and they're an anesthesiologist, the court has held that that's not in the course and scope of them being an anesthesiologist. You don't need to have an affidavit to say that's not a proper anesthesiologist's job to knock out a tooth. So there are exceptions to that, and the same should apply here, where just because it happens to have a statutory scheme which requires an affidavit does not mean that applies uniformly across the board to any possible claim against
that. Well, that exception is probably the product of an ill-advised opinion in which I offered a dissent, but let's focus on this issue here. Counsel's arguing that the pipe is itself a structure. The language in the statute kind of lends itself to that point by making the observation that a non-residential building or structure seems to imply that these are two different things.
So I will answer that specifically. And he cited the Obenchain case. In Obenchain case, the design and construction of that structure, the bus stop, was in dispute. They claimed it should have been built differently to withstand a drunk driver. And so that was that case. Okay. In this case here, they're arguing that the pipe itself is the structure. So to have the same analysis, we'd have to say that the pipe itself was somehow negligently constructed and that there's a defect in the pipe itself. I have no allegation there's a defect in the pipe itself. This is not a product liability case. We don't know what caused it other than it was on their job. But
and
the pipe is not in dispute.
You're not clearly alleging professional negligence, right? I mean, you're alleging plain vanilla negligence.
Absolutely, yes. There's plain vanilla negligence as well. And the pipe is not necessarily what's in dispute. It's the sewage that came out of this pipe. We don't know. The pipe might be fine. The structure itself might be fine. But we don't know if it's because the sewer lateral was nicked or broke. Was that because a connection came loose? Is that because a fitting broke? Is that because we don't know? I mean, were they properly lifting it with equipment to move something underneath and then something else happened? We don't know that.
Mr. Ames, I'm going to have to cut it off.
But the pipe itself is not the problem.
I think we understand the position of both sides. We appreciate your excellent arguments on behalf of your clients. So at this time, we'll take this matter into submission. Please note Justice Stiglitz, as you can see, was participating from Carson City. So she'll be participating with us in this final decision.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Okay, at this time, the court will be recessed until 2:30 when we have our next oral argument.